Hello and welcome to episode 172 of the In the Pen podcast, a podcast about relievers, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. My name is Jake Crumpler, and as always, I'm joined by Pitcherless bullpen expert Rick Graham. Rick, how's it going? How's life at home with the family? And are you a fan of superhero movies?
Oof. Everything's going well here. You know, starting to kind of settle in and get into somewhat of a groove, with nights and mornings with the baby and everything. Okay. But everyone's doing well. Still have a lot of stuff to unpack and put away in the house, but right. You know, we're getting there. Superhero movies, man. I mean, I'm very basic when it comes to that. Like the. Uh-huh. Like the Christopher Nolan Batman movies, like, yeah, I'm in those, big fan of those. But like, I've seen maybe 50% of the Marvel movies, maybe. Mm-hmm. I don't even know. But like, I'm not huge into it. Right. You asked me, you saw Spider-Man. That's why, right?
I did just see Spider-Man. Yeah. Yes. I'm always trying to come up with something to start the podcast off other than like, how's it going? All right, let's talk about relief pitchers. I saw Spider-Man a couple weeks. I hadn't seen any of the previous Tom Holland ones. I mean, maybe I had seen some of the Andrew Garfield ones. I definitely saw the Tobey Maguire ones, but those were like, you know, they came out a long time ago. So it's been a while. I have always been more of like almost an anti-superhero movie guy where I'm like, I will actively try to avoid them. And I think some of that comes from like, you know, the maybe trying too hard to be a hipster, trying too hard to be like, no, sure, I don't do the things that other people do. And that's like one of those big mainstream things. But, you know, I'm somebody who likes Pokemon, which is like beyond what Marvel is. And I try to pass that off as like, no, I'm into it more than the typical person, or I've been into it for forever and I never dropped off or anything. But they're fine. I really do. Sort of appreciate the grandeur of it all, how they have the whole universe. And it is one of those things where I'm like, you know, maybe Endgame wouldn't be too bad to go see just to see it all sort of come together. But I'm definitely not a huge superhero guy. But did you see the new Spider-Man?
I have not. No. It's been a while since we've been to the movies, but I know I still need to see Odyssey and
right. Other Do you things. Have any of the like special IMAXs out by you?
We not too far from us. I think really? 25 minutes away. Yeah. Okay. And there's an IMAX near us. So
well, they have those special ones, the like 60 millimeter one.
Oh, that I'm not sure of. I know. Yeah. I would imagine the one that's near us is if not, I'm sure there's one in Boston, which is a little bit further, but I know. I haven't been to an IMAX or one of those special ones yet. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Surprisingly, there are two in the Bay Area. I think there's only 40 of them in the entire world. So it's been super hard to get tickets for those. There's one in Dublin, which is about like, 20 minutes away from where I live. And there's one in San Francisco. Yeah. But the one in Dublin, you try to book a ticket and they are booked out for over a month. You can't even get a ticket. And if you want one, it's going to be the front row in front of the biggest screen that they have, which is crazy. Right. But I don't think I'm going to be able to get to one before it's back in theaters. Or at least while it's still in theaters. So I also want to see the Odyssey. I think that's going to be a good one at least visually and stuff. Right. But you're surprisingly so far away from the movie theaters.
I know. Now, I mean, I'm kind of far away from everything at this point. The last two apartments we lived in were like, 5 to 10 minutes at most from a movie theater, but now it's like we're in between, or actually in between both those movie theaters. So, yeah, it's a little bit further away, and then, with the kid now and the baby, that's another thing. So,
right. Not that you have to figure out what you're going to do with the kid. It's you got to make sure the first movie that they ever see is a good one.
That's true, too. I know. Start making memories.
Right. Put that in the baby book. First movie they ever saw. And it's like, I don't know, something bad. I don't want to disparage any movie, so I couldn't come up with anything. But
there's a lot of movies we could. Yeah. But yeah.
make it Moneyball.
Yeah. I mean, no, that's fine with me. That's. I don't know, anything. It would be weird if it was the Odyssey, though. That would be kind of a little too much, maybe.
Yeah, they're like 16, and they're just like, yo, I finally saw my first rated R movie. Actually, no, you saw a rated R movie before you were even one.
All right, yeah. They won't know. She won't remember.
No, you'll have to tell her. All right. Well, that's the movie talk for this beginning of the podcast. I'm sure there's plenty of other film podcasts that do much better than we could. But we are here because our expertise is relief pitchers. So we're going to talk about bullpens around baseball. Last week, we covered the American League storylines, talking about the pressing questions for the final month and a half of the regular season in the American League. Now we'll look at the National League and talk about the most pressing questions for every single National League team. But first, we will do our news and notes from the past week before we talk about the closers rising and falling on Rick's weekly closer rank. So let's start with the transactions. We've got some minor ones in Toronto. Ricky Tiedemann was recalled from the minors. He's the Blue Jays' number 11 prospect. And only a couple of years ago, he was their number one prospect, was the number two left-handed pitching prospect behind Kyle Harrison, according to MLB Pipeline, and consecutive years, 23 and 24. He made his MLB debut for the Blue Jays and then was optioned right back to the minors. But I could see him being somebody that contributes to this bullpen, obviously not significantly this year, but I think in the future, I feel like he's one of those clear failed starters that becomes a star reliever.
Yeah, I mean, are they already giving up on him as a starter too? I'm guessing the injuries. I don't think they've
given up altogether, but yeah, the injuries make it really difficult. And he's also somebody who struggled with command.
Yeah, I mean, he got into one game before he was optioned. But I mean, I get it. I still, from a stuff perspective, definitely checks the boxes. There's three pretty good pitches there. I would definitely be. If he does end up in a relief role, I'm interested. I wonder if they try to get him back into a starter role next year. Mm-hmm. But for now, I mean, that Blue Jays team is kind of creeping back into the playoff mix. Every team in the AL outside of the A's and Angels and someone else. Who am I blinking on?
Royals.
Royals, yeah. Everyone else is in the playoff mix at this point. So, but yeah, I mean, between Flaherty's been pitching better for them, but like Brandon Little's a liability. So, yeah, I mean, I could see especially when September call-ups, you know, I think Tiedemann could be a big asset for them. Because the stuff looked good in his first outing.
Yeah, the fastball is not very impressive. It's like a two-plane, 96-mile-per-hour four-seamer with below-average extension and Hava. But the sweeper graded out as a 100th percentile pitch, according to PLV, which small sample size. He only threw it a few times, but definitely notable. 16 sweepers he threw, grading out as a 6.05 PLV. That's pretty incredible. Obviously, that's dependent on his ability to command it like he did in his debut. But considering the adrenaline and jitters that comes with an MLB debut, that's pretty impressive to be able to get such a high grade on the sweeper. So Tiedemann, not somebody that we got to worry about right now, but definitely if the Blue Jays give up on him as a starter, I could see him being one of those lockdown left-handed relievers in the bullpen. Yeah. The Blue Jays also added to their bullpen, at least temporarily, by claiming Paul Sewald off waivers from the Diamondbacks. So Paul Sewald lost his job in Toronto and lost his job in Arizona and he'll go to Toronto, likely pitching in low leverage situations as a veteran presence in that bullpen.
I mean, maybe low leverage, but at the same time, they behind Tyler Rogers and obviously Varland, it's kind of wide open. You know, it's Spencer Miles and Braden Fisher have been like the other right-handed setup guys there, and both have been pretty hit or miss. So I wouldn't be totally shocked if, you know, Sewald's their seventh inning guy if in the next couple weeks. Again, Flaherty's been pitching better as their top lefty, but I think they would probably prefer him more matchup based, and then, you know, having a righty like Sewald potentially to be that seventh inning guy for them. So yeah, interesting to see. I mean, you think he made one appearance for them. Stuff looks the same as it did in Arizona, more or less. So I mean, he is what he is at this point.
Okay. Well, Paul Sewald in high leverage situations, not out of the question, given the lack of trusted right-handed options in that Blue Jays bullpen. Replacing him in the Diamondbacks bullpen is not my favorite replacement. They got they claimed Dennis Santana off waivers from the Pirates after he was designated for assignment, or maybe he was released and then signed as a minor league free agent. Regardless, Dennis Santana was selected from the minors by the Diamondbacks, replacing Philip Abner on the active roster. Abner was designated for assignment, but Santana gives that Diamondbacks bullpen another veteran reliever to replace Paul Sewald. And I got to say, I'd much rather have Sewald, but alongside Dennis Santana, the Diamondbacks also had a big IL activating Justin Martinez from the 60-day IL after he's missed all of this season and most of last season, recovering from Tommy John surgery. Gerardo Carrillo was optioned to the minors in a corresponding move. So what do you think of Dennis Santana in this bullpen? Do you think he's just sort of, you know, pitching in blowouts and stuff?
Yeah,
he's Martinez on the fast track to the closer role.
Yeah, I mean, Santana's there until they get back Ryan Thompson, probably, right. Or someone else. He won't be there long unless there's other injuries. Yeah, Martinez, I mean, so the question is what happens with the closer role there? I don't know if he's going to be the closer right away. And Arizona's getting blown out by the Red Sox again tonight. So we won't find out tonight. Maybe tomorrow, but I do think Martinez, he looked good in all of his minor league rehab outings. He had a really good minor league, it was, you know, pretty short rehab stint for him, all things considered, you know, coming back from Tommy John a year later. But he looked great. Fastball's at 102 miles per hour. And just the fact that Brandon Garcia he was like their high leverage guy, but not their closer while Martinez has been out. And once, you know, Sewald lost the job, no one else has really claimed the closer role. So I think it's Martinez's role to lose there. I mean, it might not be the first outing is the ninth inning up a couple runs, but I think eventually Martinez ends up in that role. I mean, the stuff looks great. The command was fine in the minors. So I don't really have too many concerns there. And, you know, that allows Garcia to be their, you know, kind of floating high leverage lefty. Juan Murillo can continue as the seventh, eighth inning guy for them. Bump Skinko, Lou Isaac get down to better roles for where they're more suited. So I think, yeah, I mean, this is shaping up. I mean, this team's heading for the postseason right now. They're in a pretty good spot as long as Ketel Marte is not out for any extended period of time. That
right.
Could hurt. But, I mean, yeah, the bullpen's shaping up to be pretty good here, especially with you know, how Garcia's been throwing the ball.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if you rostered Brandon Garcia, would you drop him for Justin Martinez right now?
Yeah, I would. I think that's gonna, cause again, Garcia, I mean, his last outing came in the seventh inning.
Yeah. That was weird.
To get some lefties out. That's not the first time it's happened. I mean, so he's going to get, again, if it's the Dodgers, he's going to be there to face Ohtani at some point from the seventh inning on. Mm-hmm. You know, if it's the Phillies, it's going to be short. You know, he's going to get those tough lefties at the end of the game, not necessarily the ninth inning. So I think, especially for, I mean, it sometimes works to have like, all right, for Martinez coming back from Tommy John, similar to Ben Joyce, maybe it makes sense. Like, you're going to get the ninth inning. We're going to give you the ninth inning. Not every other, like, you know, we're not going to pitch back-to-back days, but you'll get the ninth inning when we have a lead. And that's that. Like, you get that inning, makes it easier for those guys coming back. And I don't know, that could be the plan there. It would make sense to me. I think, you know, we'll have to wait and see. But I would, if I'm rostering anyone in this bullpen, it's definitely Justin Martinez at this point. And the upside makes him worth it. So I think I put him at 18, 17. I put him pretty high, probably too aggressive.
19.
Yeah, his minor league numbers just look really good stuff-wise, stat-wise. It all checks the boxes.
All right. Well, definitely worth picking up Justin Martinez if he's available in your league right now. But we'll have some more time to talk about this Diamondbacks bullpen in our NL closing storyline segment. Jacob Junis was activated from the 15-day IL by the Rangers. He's been out for the minimum time with an adductor strain. Marco Gonzalez was designated for assignment in the corresponding move. And that's huge for the Rangers bullpen. I think the Rangers have just continued to sort of fall out of favor in that AL West. But they're getting their bullpen back to strength. Jacob Junis back. He will be the top setup option to Jacob Latz.
Imagine seeing this like 5 years ago. It was like Jacob Junis being activated, Marco Gonzalez being DFA'd. in 2026. But yeah, this is where the Rangers are at. I mean, Junas is what he is at this point. He can probably work his way back into some sort of setup role, I would imagine. Peyton Gray's been solid, but not like overpowering. Same with was the lefty Robbie Ahlstrom. It's just, you know, there's some intrigue in those two. Definitely more upside than Junas, but Junas has been at least a steady option behind Jacob Lats all season. So, yeah, I mean, Junas is a very deep league holds option, but that's about it at this point.
All right. Zach Maxwell was recalled for the minors by the Reds. What do they call him? The Big Sugar or something like that?
Big Sugar sounds right. Yeah.
Yeah. Great nickname. The command, though, has not been great in the minors. So despite the hype about him last year, and we've hyped him up a little bit too, I still think he's somebody that needs a lot of work before he is somebody that's going to be trusted in that Reds bullpen.
Yeah, I mean, at least they're I kind of wrote about this in the roundup a couple of days ago. It's like if Ron Marinaccio was still there, it's like, can we like the Red? What are the Reds playing? Like, they're not going to make the playoffs. Like, can we get Maxwell up? Can we get Connor Phillips up? At least they brought up Luis May too, so they're starting to get some of those younger guys up and giving them a look. Because at this point, what else? I mean, you know, might as well see what you have for next season. It's not Marinaccio. Mm-hmm. It's not. No. Some of those other veterans they have still in that bullpen. So, yeah.
Right. And they DFA'd Marinaccio in a corresponding move to Maxwell's promotion. So they are moving towards doing the auditions for the 2027 bullpen, which I think is sort of the state of the season that the Reds are in right now. Another team that's sort of in that mode right now, too, are the Mets. And they activated Austin Warren from the 15-day IL. He's missed over a month with a forearm strain. And given all the promotions and acquisitions in that Mets bullpen, he's gone from somebody that was sort of trending towards being a trusted arm in that bullpen to now being somebody that is on the outside looking in for high leverage situations.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how he slots in there, because they do, or at least like in the past week or so, they have kind of figured out, you know, a late inning, ladder, I guess, between Lavender, Duarte, and Senga closing things out, which has been fun to see. So, yeah, right. I wonder if Warren fits in somewhere in there, is like a sixth, seventh inning, maybe a fireman type role for him.
Sure.
Because he was at before the injury, was pitching pretty well. Even when that bullpen was at full strength, he was still like teetering on, you know, entering the high leverage conversation. So if he's healthy, yeah, I'm sure it wouldn't take too much to get him back into some sort of, you know, setup, or maybe again, fireman role might be the way to go for him.
Okay, that's Austin Warren returning to the Mets bullpen in Kansas City, one of the most frustrating bullpens that we've had the honor of talking about this year. They are finally making some moves, at the very least, that are less frustrating. Lucas Ersig was optioned to the minors. He's struggled all year long. There was a good stint of the season where he was the closer, but it just was not working. They did curiously option Jose Cuas to the minors along with him, and he's had a sub-2 ERA this year, which, you know, you don't want to look at ERA to project future performance, but Cuas was pitching pretty well as well.
I don't know why they keep, you know, yeah, just keep him up at this, like, give him an actual extended look at
Cuas over Kimbrel for sure, especially when you're this far out of the So they sent Cuas and Ersig down, but the guys that they brought up, I think, are more interesting than both Cuas and Ersig. Is they got Connor Thomas and Carlos Duran recalled from the minors in corresponding moves. Duran was acquired from the Dodgers in the Chris Bubich trade, I think, and Connor Thomas was, I think, claimed off waivers from the A's or something in between pitching for the Braves. So those are a couple guys. Thomas is a lefty. Duran is a hard-throwing righty with little command. So see how those guys work in the Royals bullpen, but they are also in that state where the Mets and the Reds are, where, all right, let's see what we got for next year.
Yeah, I mean, Duran was the guy who came over for Bubich. Like you said, that's someone I'm interested in seeing, especially because minor league numbers have been pretty good. Stuff looks pretty good. It's just, the command is going to be hit or miss, but we'll just interested to see how he fares there. Because, it's a very wide open bullpen, especially looking towards next year. I'm not You know, Cruz has been pitching well, but I mean, I think he's far from being like locked into the closer role for next year. So there's definitely some openings there for the taking. So yeah, interested to see Duran for sure.
All right. And the last notable transaction involved Tyler Kinley, who was designated for assignment by the Braves. I know that Braves bullpen is sort of stacked, but I was pretty surprised to see them just let him go. They didn't just send him to the minors or anything. I don't think he had any options, but they just removed him from the 40-man roster. He's not been spectacular the past couple of years since leaving the Rockies. I know there was like the second half of the season after he was dealt by the Rockies where he had a pretty good stretch, but his underlying metrics haven't suggested that he's a dominant reliever, but he has been somebody that they've trusted in high leverage situations. He's been getting a lot of holds over the past couple of years. So I thought it was pretty surprising to see Tyler Kinley removed from the 40-man roster for the Braves.
Yeah, I mean, they do have a lot of depth. They're like the one team that can kind of afford, I guess, to do this. But yeah, it's still a little surprising. For him, it's the fastball just it's never really been good, and or at least recently it's not good, and he's got a good breaker, but I don't know, it's tough to break into that bullpen into the high leverage rules now the way Didier Fuentes has been throwing and Dylan Dodd and of course Dylan Lee. So
right, but they don't have many righties, which is
Yeah, and I think Medeiros, I think they trust Medeiros more than like it may seem like numbers wise, but I thought they would hang on to him a little bit longer, at least until like Suarez returned or something. But I'm sure he won't be too missed in that bullpen. They'll be all right.
All right. Now let's take a look at some of the injuries from the past week. Some pretty notable ones that we'll close with, but we'll start with the Angels bullpen. Jose Suarez was placed on the 15-day IL with a hip strain, and Drew Rom was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move. A different addition to that Angels bullpen was actually a lot more interesting than Rom getting recalled. It was Michael Fulmer who was selected from the minors. He's 33 years old now, the former rookie of the year, had spent most of the season at AAA with the Giants, but he landed with the Angels, I think probably around deadline time, as he was probably removed from the 40-man roster or something like that, maybe just released by the club. But anyway, he's with the Angels in AAA, pitched to a 2.93 ERA with a 29% strikeout rate, but his control wasn't great. Sammy Peralta's option to the minors in a corresponding move. But you see any path to relevancy for Michael Fulmer?
We're confusing two teams because Suarez and Rom are on the Athletics, Fulmer on the Angels.
Oh, that is correct. I should know that too. That's Suarez pitched for the Angels for so long. Yeah, it's still locked in my mind as an Angel.
Absolutely. I know. I would have it through. Yeah. I know Suarez mostly known for his time with the Angels, probably. He had been pitching well for the A's though, or all things considered. But I think, you know, Rom's not very interesting. Fulmer, I was surprised to see his name. I didn't even know. I'm not going to, bash the Angels because they've done a lot of good things with their bullpen. They have a lot of young talent in that bullpen. But like Michael Fulmer, I guess we'll take a look at him and see what that means. He looked okay. I mean, he looked like his 2023 self, basically, when he threw the other day, which is what it is. I don't know. Nothing too exciting, but it's, I guess, interesting to see him back just pitching again.
Right. Yeah. Okay, let's go to Boston, where we had a pair of injuries to the bullpen. Garrett Whitlock landed on the 15-day IL with elbow inflammation, and fellow GW initialite Greg Weissert was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move. Justin Slayton also landed on the 15-day IL with elbow inflammation. What's going on with the elbows in Boston? Raymond Burgess was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move and then subsequently optioned to make room for Wyatt Olds, who was selected from the minors. He's a 27-year-old righty who at AAA had a 5.33 ERA and a 33% strikeout rate. Is there something to Wyatt Olds? Is he somebody that is better than his numbers suggest?
I think there might be. He looked really good, stuff wise, it looked really good that first outing yesterday. Yeah. Fastball, slider, definitely could work from him. Fastball gets up to 98. Okay. AAA for Boston, pitching in in Worcester down here. It's very, a lot of home runs at that park. It's a very hitter friendly park. So I'm not too concerned about the AAA numbers, but yeah, the fastball slider look really good. I don't know. The Red Sox have been producing some, you know, pretty interesting relievers the last couple of years. So something, I mean, even like throughout the league, like a lot of these guys we talk about, they were either in the Red Sox farm system at one point or stopped here for a season, you know.
They're all Kyme Bloom's guys.
They may, maybe, yeah. I mean, maybe Olds definitely is, or he might even date further back. But he's probably not going to be here for long, but definitely someone to keep an eye on if there's more injuries or next year. But it sounds like Slayton and Whitlock should not miss too much time. Definitely seems more of a precautionary thing for both of them, who've dealt with elbow injuries in the past. So just trying to, you know, play it safe, nip it in the bud now. Hopefully they're ready by, you know, early middle of September and for the postseason.
Are Eric Miller and Tyron Guerrero expected to be the setup man with those two guys out?
It's got to be. I mean, at this point, that's they're who else? I wasn't sure what Eric Miller's role was going to be, but now these two guys are gone. It's pretty much, he needs to be a seventh or eighth inning guy for them. Guerrero is an interesting one because he was trending to be that guy, and then his last outing was 6 days ago where he let up 5 earned runs. It was ugly. Oh. The stuff was down. I don't know. I don't know if he's pitched tonight, but yeah, he hasn't pitched since that outing. And I'm a little concerned about that because they can't afford to lose him as well as Whitlock and Slayton. So hopefully everything is okay with Guerrero. The fact that he's not on the IL makes me think it is, but we'll see. Yeah.
Well, he did pitch today. He got 5 outs without allowing a run. So
all right. Well, we'll take that. Yeah.
Okay. Next, we had Abner Uribe landing on the 15-day IL with a forearm flexor strain. Never a good sign. Grant Anderson was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move. What's your concern level with Abner Uribe's injury, and who is the next man up when it comes to right-handed setup options in that Milwaukee bullpen?
Yeah, I mean, right-handed setup options. Antonio Senzatella?
Yeah,
he's throwing 100 miles per hour now in that pitching lab, but
I can't believe it. I can't believe it. It's like, you know, Joel Kunal. If Joel Kunal can do it, Senzatella can do it as well. Any forgotten old reliever that comes to Milwaukee is going to suddenly throw 100 miles per hour. Get Craig Kimbrell over there.
I know. Imagine. I think, you know, they're going to stick with the lefties, and Ashby's going to get a bigger role. And I think DL Hall has been pitching pretty well lately. He might get a bigger role. Grant Anderson, I mean, he was in the minors, but he's, for the most part, he's pitched well for them. Like, there's no reason to not trust him. So, and it does sound like it's going to be a small or minor setback for Uribe. I think he was throwing a bullpen today already. So, like, he might only miss that 15-day window. Similar to like the Red Sox guys, just trying to play it safe and just maybe give them a little extended break. I'm fine for that for that if they need a rebate. You know, they need them more in September and October anyway.
That's right. Need them for the playoff push. Need them for the playoff. So get them that rest now so he can be at full strength over the final 6 weeks. Our last IL placement is Edwin Diaz landing on the 15-day IL with neck inflammation. Rick, do you think that's whiplash from watching all the hits and home runs going over? He keeps turning his head and watching the ball fly over the wall.
It's crazy, though, that the last time he was placed on the IL was also after he allowed 4 hits and 3 runs and Coors. And then he did it last night. And I've been getting deja vu from this whole thing. I mean, I guess it's a different injury, but I mean, the same stat line and like at Colorado.
Weird.
But
he's not looking good. It's been bad. Yeah. 11.85 ERA on the year. He's walked 13% of the batters he's faced. A 2.56 whip. It's like not good. And I was so confused why Dave Roberts kept being like, well, who else is going to close? I'm like, you have the deepest relief core in the whole league. What do you mean who else is going to close? I know everybody's not spectacular right now, but anybody in the league is better than Edwin Diaz right now.
I know that whole string of comments, it makes no sense to me. And now you have to turn to one of those guys that you just called, like, you know, just called out for being awful
right
recently. And it's not like he's wrong, because like even Tanner Scott, I mean, he hasn't been allowing a lot of runs, but the whip's been up. He's been allowing base runners. Stuff hadn't been as good lately. But I mean, yeah, you just can't. It's a little disrespectful to Tanner Scott. I think they have to turn back to Tanner Scott, but maybe the fact that, you know, that's Robert's take on the whole bullpen, maybe there's other options there. Maybe, who knows? It could be Evan Phillips, Alex Vesia, Jack Dreyer's been pitching really well. Maybe him, but it's probably going to be Tanner Scott. And yeah, I guess, yeah, obviously, if he's available, or if hopefully you didn't let him go. I understand if you dropped him at some point. I didn't think Edwin Diaz was going to revert back to whatever is going on with him. You know,
yeah, I was on the verge of dropping him, but every time that Diaz came out and just blew another save, I was like, maybe I should hold on to him. And he hasn't been spectacular. Scott hasn't, but he's still pitching well. He's got a 2.20 ERA on the season and a 33% strikeout rate. I mean, he's definitely one of the best relievers in baseball still, and maybe he's not at his peak right now, but I think they'll be fine with him as the closer.
Yeah, I mean, it's like he's got like a 1.5 whip since the All-Star break, but it's like a 0.96 ERA, so base runners are there, but he's not allowing, you know, further damage. So at least, you know, even in this, you know, cold streak of his, he's still not allowing runs. So like, I don't quite understand why Roberts is so hesitant to, you know, talk about him in a glowing manner, but here we are.
He's not a Cy Young. He's not a Cy Young pitcher. So I don't really know what to do with him. He's just got an embarrassment of riches there. And anytime he's got somebody who's not the best player at their position in the entire league, he's like, this guy sort of stinks.
I mean, it's for all the talk about the Dodgers, I mean, they go out and their big signings this offseason are, you know, what, Tucker and Diaz, and they combine have a 0 F war.
So let's go. Like,
you know, and they're still, you know, a really good team. And I mean, it's just, it's such a weird, I don't know. They're allowed to make the mistakes because they pay all these guys. So, but yeah, it's still funny when they do, like, you know, mess up on these signings.
It is. But see, that's like the biggest argument against the Dodgers is like the fact that they spent like a historical contract on Kyle Tucker after already getting Edwin Diaz, and it hasn't hurt them at all. Right. It's like it doesn't even matter to them. Any other team that had to expend so much capital on two guys like that that were going to be huge members of their team and had them struggle like that, they wouldn't have done well. They would have struggled because they don't have the support there. That it's like, oh well, we don't have Edwin Diaz, we can just turn to Tanner Scott or
the guy we paid to be the closer last year,
right? Or Kyle Tucker stinks. Oh well, we have Andy Páez and, you know, Teoscar Hernandez and all these other guys. You can call Brian Ward whenever, and it's
just, they have so many outfield prospects they can turn to eventually.
So we can even trade one of them for the best pitcher one of the best pitchers in baseball.
I mean, Tucker's gonna be like a bench bat next year. We'll watch. I mean, they'll be fine, they'll figure it out.
I have to look at the free agents for next year, but I'm sure they're gonna have to replace them because that's their only weak spot.
Suzuki I mean,
exactly.
Yeah,
make him platoon or something. Well, let's talk about some news from the past week. Daniel Palencia is expected to be activated from the 60-day IL on Wednesday, so the day this podcast comes out. He's been out for the past 2 months with elbow inflammation. Do you think Palencia just immediately takes over the closer role from Jacob Webb, or do you think they're going to sort of ease him into that action or force him to prove himself again?
I think the quote from Council was that he was going to be an out-getter or something. So
aren't they all?
Yeah, I mean, that's the point of the bullpen in general. I think he ultimately takes over the closer role. That seems to be the consensus amongst, you know, people who follow the Cubs and whatnot, is that he'll eventually get the role back. And as great as Jacob Webb's been, I do think it wasn't until the last 2 weeks where they really committed to Webb as the closer. Before that, he was the high leverage guy getting outs, you know, seventh, eighth inning, whatever mattered most. So maybe they go back to that with Webb. That works out for Palencia to just come back in and settle into the ninth inning. Hopefully it's, you know, he threw really well in his last AAA outing. So I have hopes that he's ready to go. I mean, Justin Martinez did make his debut tonight. Did not look that great, but we're still pressing on. It's just the command.
How hard was he throwing?
He's throwing 100.5, but the command, okay. The command was just a mess. But that's fine. I kind of expected his command to be bad the first outing.
Right.
Jitters and all. I think Palencia might be a similar situation. But I still, you know, the stuff's just too good for him to not be at least the eighth inning guy. Palencia, I mean, he's better than, I mean, Zephyr John they traded for, but he's been struggling, so he'll get bumped down. So it's really between Palencia and Webb. And I think they probably would rather Webb as the leverage fireman guy with Palencia being the closer. So I'm in on Palencia being the closer again. Might be a little, ambitious, but I do think that's where he'll end up.
Okay. In other possible injury returnees, Felix Bautista, it could begin a rehab assignment by next week. He's recovering from surgery that he underwent last August to repair a torn labrum and rotator cuff. And if Bautista returns, that would be really exciting. I mean, we haven't seen him for the entire season, and he could be somebody that factors into high leverage situations in September if he looks strong and returns in the next couple of weeks or so.
Yeah, I'm surprised. I mean, it sounds like he might be or probably would be back before Ryan Helsley. So that makes things very interesting, especially because that bullpen right now is, again, this Orioles team all of a sudden is in the postseason as of today. And the bullpen is definitely the biggest issue. I mean, there's talent there. It's just like between Cano and Kittredge in the ninth, it has not been working out. So if they can get Bautista back or Helsley or both, I mean, and they make it into the postseason, imagine if they have both Helsley and Bautista at full strength. And then, you know, Garcia's been looking a little bit better last couple outings, and, you know, get Cano and Kittredge throwing the ball well. That's all of a sudden a really deep, tough bullpen in the postseason for teams to go up against. I don't know what they're going to do. I don't know who their three or four starters are going to be, but I mean, at least that bullpen could be pretty good. So, yeah, hopefully we see Bautista back. It's been a while,
What have you thought of Cam Sanders so far?
Yeah, he's got a good fastball. I think he's definitely made some tweaks in with Baltimore. And he got two saves kind of in he came in for Cano, I think, one game, and then the 10th inning of another game. But I mean, right now he's probably throwing the ball better than anyone else in that bullpen. Alex Hoppe too. I mean, both those guys probably could or should have bigger roles. But they still seem to, the Orioles still seem to really trust the veterans in Cano and Kittredge. So we'll see. But yeah, Sanders is definitely intriguing. Definitely at least has a good fastball to build off of.
All right. And lastly, this was some bad news, as Andrew Nardi will undergo elbow surgery, which likely forces him to miss all of the 2027 campaign. Big blow to the potential 2027 Marlins bullpen that we have been hyping up for the past couple of months, that he was sort of on track to be their top left-handed option by next year. But at this rate, that doesn't seem to be the case. It could be like, Josh White, but he's not been too great this year after having an incredible 2025. So RIP to Andrew Nardi.
Yeah, I know. And I mean, he had looked good for like a month, and then the injury started to happen, and now we're not going to see him for another year. Yeah, really, really stinks, because he's someone who, stuff wise, there's not a lot, not a lot of lefties out there who can match him. So,
right.
Yeah. I mean, this another year loss, and another year next year loss. So it's going to be, interesting to see where he is in 2028.
All right. Well, that will wrap up our news and notes from the past week. It only took us 40 minutes to get through all of that. Let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll talk about the closers rising and falling on Rick's weekly closer ranks here on In the Pen. And we're back. Jake Crumpler here with Rick Graham on In the Pen, discussing relief pitchers. Now we're into the three up, three down section, where we talk about the closers rising and falling on Rick's weekly closer ranks. Let's start with the risers, beginning with Mason Montgomery, who has had that breakout season that you have sort of been waiting for. And I think we could have the true breakout in 2027. But, man, he's looking really good. He got another save today. That's up to 5 saves now. And since they acquired Luke Weaver, I think Montgomery's gotten all the saves. It hasn't been every single save opportunity going to him. And he hasn't strictly pitched in the 9th inning. But he seems like the guy to roster there.
Yeah, I mean, he's – especially the way Weaver's pitched recently. And I mean, it's a no-brainer at this point that Montgomery should be or is the closer. He came in tonight for the 9th inning too. I mean, just lights out again. Mm-hmm. This is it. I think we're fine. It's finally happened. I finally don't have to hold my breath about when is Mason. I think we're in the middle of the breakout. I think, you know, you can go back to, there's a very strict point in time, June 23rd is the first time Mason Montgomery had ever thrown a sinker, and he's thrown it 31.3% of the time since. Wow. Recently, it's been more towards 50-60% of the time. But since he started throwing the sinker, 1.83 ERA, 0.52 xFIP, 0.66 WHIP, 55.4% strikeout rate.
What?
I mean, he's been the best reliever in baseball since he started throwing the sinker, and it's not remotely close even. So,
right.
Yeah. I mean, this is the Mason Montgomery. This is the left-handed Mason Miller
we've been
waiting for. And yeah, for this year, definitely, I don't think Luke Weaver is much of a threat. He'll be the 8th inning guy. That's fine. But, I mean, Montgomery's going to get the saves. I do at this point though, before entering the year, Mason Montgomery was a 2-pitch guy. Now all of a sudden he's been throwing 5 different pitches. I wonder, I would consider him in the rotation next year if I'm Pittsburgh, but I don't know, that might be too ambitious or too greedy. But I mean, he's shown 5 plus pitches this year at times. So, I feel like he's young enough where maybe you take a chance and, see how he transitions. But I mean, either that or he's just going to be an elite closer. It's similar to Mason Miller, but Mason Miller only is a 2-pitch guy, really. So that's why I didn't really expect Miller to move into the rotation this year.
Yeah, pretty impressive this year from Mason Montgomery, finally emerging as the guy we hyped him up to be for the past couple of years. Another big hype reliever, Ben Joyce, made his return from the injured list, and he has not missed a beat. He missed a long time, but he returned and he's pumping 104 miles per hour. He's looking dominant, and the Angels are seeming to trust him in the 9th inning. He's gotten the past 2 saves for the Angels. He has not allowed a run in 5 innings pitched. He's struck out 38% of the batters he's faced. He's throwing strikes, which is huge. I don't think he's guaranteed to get every save. You talked about, who are we talking about?
Natero.
No. You were talking about we were talking about a righty that's sort of returning from injury. You were talking about Justin Martinez not getting every single save. Sort of splitting stuff with Brandon Garcia. I think that's the case with Ben Joyce too, where they aren't going to sort of run him into the ground with the Angels out of the postseason race, but he's going to get the majority of the saves, and Sam Manatero is going to be, I think, worth rostering as well, just because he's been so dominant. But Ben Joyce is looking like the closer that we envisioned him to be when he was closing out games for the Tennessee Volunteers in college.
Yeah, it's tough because you don't want to roster both Angels guys because they're not going to win enough games. Hypothetically, they're not going to win enough games, right? Mm-hmm. So it could, if it is Joyce getting the bulk of the saves, and again, it's kind of weird. We haven't seen Natera in a week. Natera got a save on Tuesday of last week, and that was the last time we saw him pitch. Mm-hmm. But again, with him and probably with Joyce, you know, the Angels aren't playing for anything. They're probably going to be very conservative, very careful with these guys. So I would imagine they essentially split time and they get extra rest. But I mean, the way both of them are throwing right now, and they're both top 5 relievers over the past month. And Joyce, I mean, it's hard to say that for Joyce because he's just came back, but I mean, the stuff is electric. The fastball looks great. He's locating it. And it's just, I would love to see I would love to see the slider be something more, be a little bit more consistent with it, but I don't think he really needs it. that much. And
yeah,
I mean, they have this labeled as a sinker, but it's really that it's a split change, I believe, is it's a slinker or whatever that he's throwing as his secondary. And that pitch has been fine too. So I mean, but the fastball is all he really needs. I mean, Etera's only been throwing a fastball and dominating with it too. So
yeah,
it's a fun, they're building something fun in that bullpen potentially.
Finally. Yeah, I mean, they opened the season with Jordan Romano as the closer.
Yeah, right. So I was Jordan Romano and Drew Pomeranz and
Kirby Yates.
We've come a long way in Anaheim. That's in Anaheim. Yeah.
It is. Yeah. If you've been to Disneyland, it's in Anaheim for sure. Yeah, that's very exciting for the Angels. They finally got some relievers to cheer about, and hopefully at some point we get the Robert Stevenson experience. But who knows if that guy's ever going to be healthy again. Our last riser is Rico Garcia. Is that because of the struggles of Andrew Kittredge and Yennier Cano in Baltimore?
Yeah, I'm trying to keep this AL only since we have the NL storylines. So just trying to, like, we haven't seen, I mean, Garcia's been very hit or miss recently. The fastball velocity, fastball shape. I mean, he was throwing, I mean, his fastball had, like, you know, consistently like 18, 19 inches of IVB earlier in the season. And that kind of just disappeared. The velocity disappeared. Last outing, though, it looked more like the April version of him with, you know, he was 95.5 miles per hour with an 18 plus IVB. So, like, all right, we're getting back to Rico Garcia of old, and just the way that Kittredge and Cano have been pitching there. Maybe there's an, if they're not willing to go to like a Cam Sanders or Alex Hoppe, maybe there's a chance Garcia could work his way into the closer role, at least until Bautista returns. But yeah, it's that whole bullpen's a mess right now. And I'm leaning towards just not even really going near it until one of the guys returns between Bautista and Helsley.
Okay. Well, as those guys rise up the ranks, others need to fall to accommodate them. On the south side of Chicago, Grant Taylor has been being passed up for save opportunities. Sean Newcomb and Brian Hudson have gotten the last two saves. They've been getting the majority of saves over the past month or so, definitely since the All-Star break. Taylor is also not as dominant as he was early in the season. I know last week you talked about how his velocity's been down a little bit as well. I still think he's one of the best relievers in baseball and is definitely somebody who could be like a top 10 closer next year if the White Sox are willing to forego his evolution into a starter. But so far right now in August and July, it's not looked like he is a fantasy relevant reliever in saves only leagues.
Yeah. It's just hard to trust him, especially, I mean, I had like with like guys like Martinez and Palencia coming back, it's just hard to trust, you know, Taylor, because he's not getting the bulk of the saves he probably should be. I mean, and this stuff has deteriorated, but it's still better. It's still more consistent than anything else they have in that bullpen. I mean, outside of Jordan Hicks, who they gave a save chance to the other day, and all of a sudden he can't stop walking people. So I think, yeah, that's the reason why they weren't going to him. But I mean, yeah, the strikeout stuff has been missing. And he's, I mean, what do we have? We've got way more holds. He's only got one save, you know, one save over the past month. So, again, he's not allowing runs. So he's not hurting you, but it's just, there's the upside isn't, he's not coming close to that upside that we had kind of hoped that he might reach, I guess, the strikeouts and saves. So,
well, yeah, especially once they traded Sir Anthony Dominguez, it seemed like, oh boy, here we go. It's Grant Taylor time. And it just has not been the case. They've gone to even more of a committee since then.
I know. And even now they even like kind of snuck in the Hicks or Brazoban too, you know, between Newcomb. Now they have like five or six guys they're willing to roll out there in the ninth and just muddies everything. I don't know. I guess it's kind of working, I guess. I mean, they're not playing poorly. They're the relievers between Taylor, Hudson, and Newcomb for the most part have been pitching well. And Hicks obviously as well. So I guess it's working, but it's just frustrating from a fantasy aspect.
All right. Our next faller is Yoendris Gomez, who has retained the closer role in Minnesota, but he hasn't done so with much confidence. And maybe that's what happens when a team goes out and acquires some competition there, as the Twins acquired Jeff Hoffman and a couple other guys, but Hoffman's definitely the biggest name to that can threaten his closer role. But August has not really been kind to Gomez. 4 walks and just 5 strikeouts in 4 2/3 innings. He's also allowed 3 runs, 2 of which were earned, for a 3.86 ERA. But the XFIP nearing 5 is definitely a little bit concerning. I don't think the Twins are going to take Gomez out of that closer role until he starts blowing saves, until probably it's too late. But what's your take on Gomez? Why do you have him moving down your ranks?
Yeah, I mean, he hasn't looked he hasn't looked that bad. Actually, the stuff has been better since they traded for Hoffman. I think there was something to that, where maybe a little bit of a, you know, kick in the pants with getting like a competition in there. And he looked great tonight again. I mean, he had a save tonight, looked actually really good in it. But I think I'm not so much down on him as there's two things here. There's the fact that Palencia and Martinez returned, and then they were very quick, at least if I'm reading this right, they're pretty quick to move on from Andrew Morris as a setup guy. The way that things have been going now, it's Minter and Hoffman in front of Gomez. So I just think that the fact that they were so quick to kind of move on from Morris, if like anything happens with Gomez here, I do think that they'd be pretty quick to move on and go to the veterans and Hoffman or Minter. But there's other guys too. I mean, Cody Funderburk's been pitching really well for them all of a sudden. Taylor Rogers has actually been better too. So
a good bullpen in Minnesota.
I know. All this, that coming. We've come a long way.
Yeah.
So I think not really concerned about Gomez yet, but I feel like just like one or definitely like 2 shaky outings could probably potentially make some changes there, because yeah, they went out and got Jeff Hoffman. I don't think they got Jeff Hoffman just to be a 7th or 8th inning guy. I might be wrong, but yeah.
Well, I'm sure they'd be happy to use him as a high leverage guy.
Yeah, so yeah. Gomez
continues to be great, but that doesn't seem like it's going to last for long. They have a guy they can turn to.
Yeah, and like you said, the underlying stuff of Gomez is, and it's hitter. I mean, he's kind of like where Caleb Killian was earlier in the year, where, you know, one day he looks great, the next day it's like, yeah, what? I don't know if I really trust this or believe in this. So it's, it's been a little bit shaky with him, but I do think, yeah, he's safe for now. But I think once there's more cracks, I think Hoffman or even AJ Minter, they definitely like Minter there. So one of those two guys could potentially work their way into the closer role.
All right. And our last fallers are those aforementioned guys in the Orioles bullpen, Andrew Kittredge and Yennier Cano. They've both struggled this past week when they were sort of given the co-closer job there since the deadline, but it hasn't really worked out for them.
Yeah. I mean, Kittredge just isn't, I mean, the stuff just isn't there for him, and Cano just isn't a closer. I mean, it's like, there's not enough swing and miss, too many ground balls in this day and age. And that's what got him the other night. It's just like, you know, 3 ground ball singles. I mean, but that's just when you don't have that much swing and miss and you're a ground ball guy, like that's going to happen from time to time. So,
right.
Especially in the 9th inning where, you know, there's more guys in motion, potentially. There's just a lot of, you know, variables there where I prefer Cano. The role they had him in earlier in the year was a lot better, where he was just like getting righties out, no matter, you know, coming in, getting the last out of an inning against the righty, like that was working. Mm-hmm. But pitching a full 9th inning, probably not his strong suit.
Okay, well, that will wrap up our 3 up, 3 down section. To recap, our risers were Mason Montgomery, Ben Joyce, and Rico Garcia, and our fallers were Grant Taylor, Yoendris Gomez, Andrew Kittredge, and Yennier Cano. Next, we'll move into our main topic and discuss the pressing questions in the National League for the remainder of the season. But first, we're going to take another break here on In the Pen. And we're back. Jake Crumpler here with Rick Graham on In the Pen discussing relief pitchers. Let's talk about the National League closing storylines. We'll go through all 15 teams in the National League and answer a couple of questions that will give us a better idea of what to look for in each bullpen down the stretch. Let's go alphabetically, starting with the Diamondbacks. And we already sort of talked about the return of Justin Martinez and the potential of him taking over that closer role. So let's shift our focus more to Brandon Garcia, who was somebody that really emerged as a fantasy relevant reliever since the trade deadline, as he was the guy who was getting the majority of the saves since then. And he's been pitching really electric this year, 31% strikeout rate, 2.52 ERA. But with Justin Martinez in town, can Brandon Garcia stay fantasy relevant in a platoon setup role? And I'm mostly talking in standard save only leagues.
Right. I mean, in standard leagues, I don't know. I guess it depends on if they do really want to play matchups there. There's a chance Garcia could still get some saves. I mean, if you're in a league where there's like 30 plus relievers rostered, yeah, I mean, Garcia probably should be one of them for sure.
Okay.
But yeah, I, again, there's, you know, just a lot of uncertainty there. And it's not, he has struggled a little bit recently. And, you know, the last outing came in the seventh inning where he did give up a home run. So yeah, I just, you know, honestly, if they were to go to a different reliever in the ninth, not Martinez, I would think Marillo would get the next chance the way he's been throwing. Okay. But they're like weird about using him. I don't know why they don't. Something about LeVou. I don't think Tori LeVou really has trust in him, or maybe just, I don't know. It's weird how he, you know, he gets passed up on for Loaisiga or Ginkle. I know LeVou is a big, you know, a big fan of his veterans, but like Brandon Garcia is pretty young too. He kind of just made his debut, you know, last year. So, yeah, I do think, you know, in save holds leagues, you still want Garcia and Morello for sure. Save only though, again, it's kind of like, so I guess in a way similar to, it's not like the Tanner Scott, Edwin Diaz situation, but I do think that, like, you know, you're probably going to move on from Garcia in the next week or two, as long as Justin Martinez can, you know, start commanding his stuff again, which again, the first game tonight, I'd imagine, you know, the command was going to be rough anyway. It's rusty, but yeah, I think Martinez is going to be the guy sooner rather than later there. And Garcia probably won't be too relevant in standard leagues.
Okay. I see parallels between Garcia and Sammy Natera Jr., where they both have this hard-throwing, returning teammate who is like the closer of the future, who the club is probably not going to put too much pressure on. But both Garcia and Natera have had breakout seasons where now they're in that sort of platoon setup closer role where they're going to get those vulture saves when the club doesn't want to use those guys in back-to-back games. We'd rather have Natera or Murillo. I think Natera's been, or Garcia. I mean, Natera's been pitching better, but he's also pitches for a worse team that's going to have fewer save opportunities.
That's what I know. And I'm pretty sure that I had them fairly close today. But yeah, it's like put Natera 25. I mean, I put Garcia all the way down to 33.
Mm-hmm.
I might be, I mean, I just, because that's the thing is Garcia isn't even guaranteed the closer role when Martinez wasn't here. So that's the thing. I think Natera and Joyce are at least splitting that role. So I think I'd still rather Natera because, again, Ginkle got a save the other day for the Diamondbacks. I mean, they're kind of all over the place with what they were doing after Paul Sewald. So I think eventually it's just Martinez who settles into the role as long as he's healthy and throwing strikes, which he should get back to.
Okay. Let's go over to the Atlanta Braves. And I think we got to talk about the closer situation there. Raisel Iglesias has been the closer all year when he's been healthy, but he's sort of had a season that's not similar to his previous ones. In the past, he's always been a guy who is a little bit underwhelming in the first half, and then he turns it on after the All-Star break and becomes one of the best relievers in baseball. But since he had an amazing first half where he had like an ERA under one or something, it's not been as great in the second half. So are we seeing Raisel Iglesias having reverse second half, first half splits as opposed to what we've seen in the years past? Because in the second half so far, 5.40 ERA. The strikeout to walk ratio is 21% to 12%. That's pretty not good. And I think Iglesias is not looking as dominant as he was in the first half.
Yeah. I was going to mention him as more one of the down relievers for today, but figured we're going to talk about him later or now. So yeah, I don't know. I don't know what he needs to do. I don't know what there is left there for him to do. I mean, he could change his pitch mix again. Maybe throws the slider more now. I mean, he took away the slider last year and that worked. Maybe he needs to go back to it now that his fastball and changeup have kind of been getting hit around a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there is definitely concerns because it doesn't seem to be going away, these issues. And yeah, like how bad does it have to be for anyone else to get a chance? That's the question. I mean, what like, I mean, Didier Fuentes has been pitching. He's been lights out. He's been one of the best relievers in baseball recently. So, like, again, the a lot of teams, they would, like, be hesitant to make that move, but the Braves are pretty aggressive when it comes to promoting their younger pitchers into these types of roles or to you know, certain roles. So I'd imagine they would feel comfortable with that, with Fuentes taking the closer role, especially since Suarez doesn't seem, I don't know what's going on with Robert Suarez at this point.
Yeah.
But yeah, I if Robert Suarez was there, this would be a very different conversation, I feel. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm nervous about Iglesias, but for now it's not like they haven't really given any hints as to him, you know, losing that role anytime soon. So
right.
I think it would take something kind of major for him to, at least for the questions to start coming about what's going to happen in that closed role.
Yeah. I would think that because they have so many lefties there that maybe Dylan Lee would get a shot. I think he's been the most underrated reliever in baseball for the past few years. He's been so elite and nobody ever talks about Dylan Lee, sub 2 ERA this year and a 34% strikeout rate. I think because they've got Dylan Dodd, Suter, and Ray Kerr there right now, they've got enough lefties to support Lee as the closer. And they really don't have many right-handed options after they DFA'd Tyler Kinley and they're without Robert Suarez for such a long time. And he still seems to be a few weeks away from returning. So I think while Fuentes looks like that closer of the future type guy, I feel like maybe Dylan Lee's got an inside edge to that closer role if Iglesias continues to struggle, but definitely something to keep an eye on there.
Yeah, because I mean, I think you know, I've always been not against Lee, but I feel like the Braves have, I get the sense that the Braves are against using Dylan Lee in the ninth. But yeah, it's interesting that they went out, they added Suter, they just recently added Ray Kerr, and Kerr's kind of an interesting lefty. Mm-hmm. Who would probably be on a lot of other bullpens if he was in another organization. Mm-hmm. And Dodd's already been kind of a setup guy for them too. So
yeah,
maybe Dylan Lee. I mean, obviously Dylan Lee deserves the chance to close out games because he's been, it's not even just been this year. I mean, last year he was really good too. So I could see that as being the case, but they did give him a chance to close out games last year when Iglesias was struggling and it didn't go well for Lee. I wonder if that has something to do with it, but
yeah.
I mean, either way, Fuentes or Lee have both been better than Iglesias. It's not really close.
Yeah. So I'm holding on to Dylan Lee in the pitcherless staff league right now, which is standard head-to-head categories league. He is the 67th ranked player.
He's still helping,
according to the player rater. Yeah, he's great. Yeah. And I'm like, okay, well, I'll hold him for a couple of weeks. And if he eventually takes over the closer role, that's a huge boon to my fantasy team. So definitely Dylan Lee is somebody that's already amazing and has upside for more. So definitely keep an eye on him and that Braves closer situation. Let's go to the north side of Chicago. We already talked about Daniel Palencia, who's on the verge of returning. And so I think the real question here is, can this bullpen get healthy before the playoffs? I mean, Palencia's return is answering that a little bit. They are getting a little bit healthier, but even with him there, it's still huge question marks. If you're relying on all these like Toby starters, like Aaron Civale, Javier Assad, David Peterson, and Colin Ray as relievers, I don't know what's going on there. But outside of that, it's like, you know, you talked about how Ryan Zephyrjohn sort of struggling. Trent Thornton's way too reliant on batted balls, and Caleb Thielbar and Ryan Rollison are solid, but not like the overwhelming postseason guys that you need, that you have on the IL right now, like Phil Maton or Palencia, and, you know, even Hunter Harvey, if he ever has the potential of returning.
What happens when they trade for 500 starters? Now you got to move them into the bullpen because you don't have any relievers. Because I think it sounds like Harvey is kind of, I don't know if he's getting close, but there's a chance. Shelby Miller has been rehabbing. I forgot that they even had Shelby Miller. And I mean, who knows about Phil? And Phil Maton might be out for the year, but between Harvey and Miller. I mean, Gavin Hollowell was throwing well before he got hurt, so there's some options there. But yeah, so your big three, I think that you're hoping for is, you know, Jacob Webb, Palencia, and you traded a lot for Ryan Zephyrjohn. He's been good most of the year. I know he's been struggling lately, but Zephyrjohn's the type of power arm that helps you out in the postseason. So I think that's, you know, that's what they're hoping for with, you know, if you get anything from Harvey, that's a bonus. I mean, Trent Thornton's been pitching well, but I don't, that could just be that that's probably not serious. Like,
there's
I don't think
no way. Yeah. 4% strikeout minus walk ratio. No way.
So they still feel a little light there. I mean, I know Savali's been better as a reliever.
Yeah, but
Teelbar probably you expect more from, but yeah, it's, it still feels light behind those top three, even when healthy. And then like trying to trust Hunter Harvey. I mean, that's kind of foolish at this point. So poor Phil Maton. I mean, who knows between those two guys, two wild cards. So
yeah,
it's going to be a dicey bullpen in the postseason for sure.
Yeah. Not feeling super confident about this Cubs bullpen right now, especially as they are a playoff bound team. It seems like they're going to be like so reliant on Webb and Zephyr John and Palencia that they will definitely show some cracks, especially if they are having to turn to Aaron Civale in the seventh inning of a close game in the playoffs. That does not seem ideal. So hopefully the Cubs can get back to full health before October. Let's go to the Reds, and the Reds are in that situation where they're trying to figure out who's going to be good for next year. Emilio Pagan is the closer, but he does have a player option for 2027, which I think he'll honestly decline considering he's been pretty solid since returning. Yeah. He was great last year. So I think he's going to go and try and get a multi-year deal in free agency. So with Pagan out, I think now it's time to talk about who is going to emerge as the next generation of setup men in the Reds bullpen, and maybe who's the next in line for being the closer in 2027.
I mean, yeah, if it stays in-house, that's what we'll consider for now. Yeah. That's all we have. You know, Luis May has looked really good since he returned. I'm liking this new Luis May, and it's not really new. He's just, you know, he's not throwing as hard. His velo's down a mile per hour or two, but the command, he's not walking. Like, the command's a lot better. He's not walking guys. And with his sinker slider, he's still able to, you know, get swings and misses. So he's been really great for them since coming back. So that's definitely a name I am keeping an eye on. You know, Zach Maxwell just came up too. The other one, I mean, Julian Garcia is a rookie for them, and he's 31. He's definitely older for a rookie, but he's got a very interesting skill set where it's, you know, the fastball's funky. It's not hard. He doesn't throw hard, but it's kind of like in that Phil Maton, Matt Festa weirdness, you know, range with his fastball. So maybe something there. But yeah, and I don't, there's like nothing else for thing. I mean, they're losing Burke, Johnson's, Sam Moll, whatever. So yeah, they're really going to either have to depend on these younger guys next year or just kind of revamp the bullpen, which I don't, you know, I don't see them going out and spending a bunch of relievers. So yeah,
I mean, they don't spend money on anybody. So
yeah, they're going to have to get some help from, you know, from some of these younger guys. Hopefully Connor Phillips can, you know, figure out his command. I mean, that doesn't ask. Come on. I mean, I don't know.
Oh, of course. Like, I want it to happen. Looked at his minor league numbers and I saw how bad his walk rate was, and it's just not any better.
How have we not made the necessary tweak there? But yeah, I mean, this just doesn't happen for everyone. So
yeah.
Yeah, we'll see.
Well, I still see the potential in a guy like Chase Petty. I think if he can figure out how to throw more strikes, there's potential there. Yeah, we talked about Zach Maxwell earlier in the year. If he can throw more strikes, it's a lot of guys. It's like that Angels bullpen where they have a lot of guys who don't throw strikes. But if they can find one or two that can maintain their incredible stuff and start throwing strikes, like you were talking about with Luis May, they have a lot of potential there.
Yeah, and forgetting about Ashcraft and Santillan on the IL. Ashcraft's going to avoid surgery. I don't know if that's a good thing or not, but he should be available at least next year. And I think Santillan's working his way back, so he'll be back at some point this season. Okay. He was looking better before he went on the IL, so there's that too. I mean, wouldn't count him out yet.
Right. And I sort of see maybe for 2028, Hunter Green just cannot stay healthy. That seems like a guy who might – he can't stay healthy. You can't keep starting him for six innings and watching his elbow blow up every other game. So maybe there's potential for him being a closer in the future if he just cannot stay healthy. Obviously, I understand the potential of Green as a starter. Yeah, it's just sometimes it's just what you got to do. But there's definitely potential in that Reds bullpen. They just got to figure out how to throw strikes. The problem in Colorado is less throwing strikes and more so just avoiding the damage of pitching in Coors and having to move from high elevation to low elevation constantly. But the Rockies have a different front office, and it looks like they are doing a lot better when it comes to identifying guys that not only are good pitchers, but are good pitchers for pitching in Coors. And I think the question right now is, can they find the pieces to put together a bullpen that can eventually survive Coors? We've already seen some guys succeed there. Brendan Bernardino has had a great year there, which I'm not sure that's going to stick around. But they have a lot of young guys too. Jaden Hill, Wellington Herrera was pitching well in a small sample size. There's other guys there. Juan Mejia, he's not been great, but definitely some potential. So what kind of guys do you think that the Rockies could put together to have a bullpen that you would feel somewhat confident in? Mason Miller, Josh Hader,
Mason Miller stuff probably looks pretty good. Mason Montgomery stuff probably plays well there. I don't know. Nothing immediately sticks out, and especially in the organization, I don't think there's any real answer there. I don't know, but then you have a guy like Jordan Romano is working for whatever reason. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense. So it's not the answer. Like they could just keep throwing things against the wall and see what sticks. That might be the answer for the short term, which I've always thought, you get sinker ballers there, or you get, it's just hard to get big swing and miss there because, the fastball is not going to play as well in Colorado. Right.
And he traded away Seth Halverson, so there goes maybe the one ticket traded to success.
They're big fastball guys they've gotten rid of. So it seems like they're kind of moving away from that at this point. Maybe that's the way to go. I don't know. This bullpen right now is not good. I don't know. Bernardino's been working for them. That's the one guy who's been pretty consistent all year.
Is he just fastball slider?
I think he's just like a sinker slider lefty. He doesn't throw like particularly sinker hard.
Curveball. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's hard to figure it out.
Brandon Bernardino's and just, pitch to contact, get sinkers and make plays.
Right. I mean, Michael Wacha was really good there a couple weeks ago. So maybe you need some guys with big changeups or something that can get the job done. Even though I know changeups are really subject to
do well there. Yeah.
Yeah. So that didn't really make sense to me. But yeah, it's a really hard conundrum. But there's so many smart minds at baseball that I think want to figure it out. So they should be able to figure it out. And I think the bullpen is the place to start. And then you can sort of transfer that to the rotation, because it's going to be a long while before you have enough starters there that survive. But with Jordan Romano, do you think he can avoid imploding before the end of the year and be somebody that's actually worth rostering in deep leagues?
Realistically, no. it's a tough schedule. And it's Jordan Romano. I mean, they have a bunch of home games coming up. And I think on the road, it's like at New York, Chicago, and someone else tough. So it's just, I don't love it for his odds. And it's not like anything's changed since he got there. The stuff looks terrible still. The command's not great. It's just, it's been working. Like, it worked for him. I mean, he almost got a full month in with the Angels as the closer there. So, he's about due for that, for the implosion to happen in Colorado.
Only a matter of time. Let's go to the Dodgers. And I think the question I would like answered most is, what does the full strength bullpen look like? Like, who are the eight guys you want in this bullpen for the playoffs to, like, when they're at full health? Who are those eight guys? Eight guys? Yeah, it should be eight guys.
I mean, Edwin Diaz needs to be there. You need to get him right. There's definitely some things going on there that he needs to work out. But I think ultimately the stuff didn't look too bad the last couple times out. It's the command has been terrible, and just You can tell he has no confidence in throwing a slider or pretty much anything. He's, you know, maybe to, I don't know. There's something there they need to figure out. But Diaz needs to be right. Obviously, mm-hmm. Scott, you know, Scott and Vezia. I know Vezia's been struggling, but he's still there. He's still the stuff's still there for him. So those three, Phillips is four. And that's when now it starts to get weird. Mm-hmm. I think you still have to have Edgardo Henriquez and Jack Dwyer definitely are those guys are locks for me. I think five and six there. So then two more spots between, I would say, you know, is Will Klein going to be back this year? I don't know. I think Brock Stewart will be back. I think Stewart's probably seven, gets the seventh spot for me.
Mm-hmm. Consider Justin Wroblewski as well, because I know they're going to move him to the bullpen.
Yeah. But even, I don't even know. I mean, yeah, he looked good out of the bullpen last year. I guess
in the playoffs. Yeah.
Yeah. So he probably is the guy. He probably is in there. I mean, yeah, I think that might be it. I mean, Blake Treinen's coming back either this week or next. I don't have too much faith in that, but mm-hmm. Dave Roberts loves that guy. So I'm sure if he's healthy, he's going to be on the postseason roster, which, yeah, I mean, we'll see. But yeah, I mean, if Will Klein's healthy, I would take him over Treinen. If, mm-hmm. I mean, even if you have like a healthy, I mean, Ben Kasperius, I'd probably take over Treinen. But
yeah.
Oh, Chris Bubich is going to be in the bullpen too.
Yeah. See, it's like picking an all-star team, trying to figure out who's going to be the top.
Emmett Sheehan in the bullpen. I mean, yeah, there's guy Kyle Hurt pitched pretty well the other day. Right. I mean, yeah, I don't know. There's too many.
The first six you named seem right. And then I think the last two spots are going to be, yeah, either Stewart. Klein seems like he's going to undergo surgery. So Stewart, Treinen, Wroblewski, Sheehan, or Hurt. I feel like Stewart's probably going to come back from the injured list and then get injured again. So I would probably cross him off the list. So I would say it's probably Treinen and Wroblewski, just because Bubich, they're going to want somebody that they have confidence in. I know Wroblewski is also on the injured list right now, but Bubich is somebody who hasn't pitched all year. And when he comes back,
he's been so good as a reliever in the past. I mean, we've seen him as a reliever.
Yeah. I'm sure the Dodgers are going to make him even better. So that'll definitely be something to watch. I think whoever wins the battle between Bubich and Wroblewski, but I think, it'll be Treinen probably over those two, just because he's got more experience.
He shouldn't be, but yeah, you're probably right.
Yeah. So we'll see. Definitely something to keep an eye on, but that is a legendary bullpen. And I think maybe if you're not that confident in Edwin Diaz, there's so many other options. He might not be.
I mean, yeah, maybe now. Tanner Scott wasn't on the World Series roster last year. So, I mean, there's, you know.
That's crazy. It would
be crazy. So, yeah.
Yeah, and they still won, all thanks to it. Will Klein pitching like four innings in relief. That was crazy. All right. Let's go to the Marlins bullpen. And what's the pressing storyline, the closing storyline you have here for the Marlins?
I mean, Pete Fairbanks has been pitching really well lately, but I don't think he's going to return. He's not going to be with the Marlins next year.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess we can talk about for this year or next year, like what's the pecking order here? I mean, Michael Peterson had been pitching well. He got blown up tonight really bad. Okay. Calvin Fauché has kind of come back and been like really good for them lately. And then you have like Tyler Zuber has been pitching well.
Out of nowhere.
Yeah. And then, you know, then you have interesting arms in Vodnik and Eknis who have really good stuff. Mm-hmm. Just haven't put it all together yet. You have Henriquez coming back next year. Bender. I mean, yeah, there's a lot of options in this bullpen. I think it's similar to not the Dodgers, but like, you know, who are we looking forward to for next year for setup guys from here on out for this season, and mm-hmm. then next year if they don't sign a closer, does it go back to Fauché? Is Peterson gonna ever get a real chance to save out? I mean, his closer stuff, I get it, but they have been, Zuber's been pitching really well too. I mean, they like Zuber, so
don't forget Ronnie Henriquez is coming back,
and Ronnie Henriquez is back next year.
Yeah,
that's and Bender, be a big one. Bender's got one more year too. He could stay there. I mean, Bender was looking great until he got hurt, so yeah, I mean, very interesting bullpen as well here. And I don't think they need to go out and spend money. That's not the place they need to spend money on. I think they can piece it together with what they have. and, you know, spend their money elsewhere. So I do think, you know, for next year, between Fauché, Peterson, Henriquez, Bender, maybe Vodnik, Zuber, or Eknes as outside options, there's definitely there's definitely some closer potential here. I just don't know. I mean, I would have said Peterson, but I don't know. I mean, they love themselves some Calvin Fauché, and he's looked great lately. So
yeah, and it sucks that both William Kempner and Andrew Nardi are undergoing elbow surgery.
I know Kempner's out too. Yeah.
So we won't get them next year, though those guys were potential. We've seen Josh White dominate the minors in 2025. That hasn't been the case this year. I think there's plenty of options in the minor leagues too. But I think you sort of hit on everybody. Yeah, Brandon Bidois as well. There is potential here in this bullpen, and I definitely am excited to see how this goes together next year. I think I want my money on Ronnie Henriquez, just considering how good he was in 2025, yeah. But we obviously got to see what he looks like recovering from Tommy John surgery. However, there's so many options here as we ran through. Let's go to the Brewers. And who do you think is the next guy to emerge out of the Brewers pitching lab as that guy that comes out of nowhere and becomes one of the dominant relievers in baseball? Because the Brewers have just been so good at doing that over the past decade or so.
Yeah, I mean, I feel DL Hall's been kind of making a move here. His velocity's been up. I don't know. I mean, he's been there for a while, so he's not like a new guy, but I'm interested to see a little bit more of this DL Hall, you know, this version of him. I do wonder, the one guy who we haven't seen, and he's coming and working his way back, I think he could be back next week, is Jojo Romero. Is he going to start throwing 96, 97 all of a sudden? Right. Because that's like, I mean, oh man, that's a huge difference for a guy like Romero, who's pitched well without the velocity. But I mean, if any addition, anything that could help Romero here would be fun to see. So again, he's going to be a free agent to be. So I think that's a name to keep an eye on, just to see see how Romero stuff looks like a month from now, and then you know, going into the off season, if you can take those changes and run with it. But I mean, they've just really maximized everyone in this bullpen to like, I mean, you're getting the most out of guys like Chad Patrick. And I mean, probably Grant Anderson, Bryce Wilson, sometimes Aaron Ashby. I mean, the whip is terrible for Ashby, but everything else looks pretty good. So it's, I don't know. It's just like anyone who you stick in that bullpen, except for, No, pretty much anyone you stick in that bullpen pitches well for them. So,
right.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, amazing to see this.
Yeah, my mind immediately goes to some of the starters there just because they're pretty deep in the rotation. So I'm thinking, okay, who's sort of on the outside looking in for next year? And I think somebody like Coleman Crow or maybe Brandon Sproat, I don't think they'll give up on him so quickly. But Coleman Crow is definitely a guy. He's got the Phil Maton type reliance on a low V, low cutter. So maybe he could be an option. I know they have guys like Colton Gordon. I think he used to pitch for the Rockies. Before he Astros? Went to the Astros. Was it only the Astros?
I don't know.
He was never the Rockies. But that's another guy who has not really had a lot of opportunities as a starter. And maybe it's like you can't look at what they've done in the past and say, oh, this is what this guy's going to be because the Brewers can just make anybody throw 100 miles an hour. But Colton Gordon is a lefty who has a 94th percentile PLV fastball, even though it comes in at 91 miles an hour. Pretty elite extension there. He throws a lot of strikes with it. It comes with a 97th percentile sweeper as well. And this is just from like nine innings pitching for the Astros this year. So maybe the Brewers can do something with him as well. I think there's a few names that sort of go under the radar like that, that will ultimately emerge as reliable options in that Brewers bullpen.
Yeah. And depending on what happens with guys like Drohan or Gasser, if they're in the rotation or not next year. I mean, Drohan looked really good as a reliever before moving into the rotation. So yeah, that's someone to keep an eye on too.
All right, let's go to Queens and talk about the Mets. Kodai Senga has emerged as the closer in Queens, but the thing is, he's sort of in that Justin Martinez, Ben Joyce boat of, I don't think the Mets are going to use him on back-to-back days, or maybe not in three of the past four. Yeah, they used Daniel Duarte on Monday night after Senga got the save on Sunday and Friday. And I think that's less so like he's returning from injury and more so this is a guy who's been a starter throughout his career. So sort of switching up his role and forcing him to pitch on back-to-back days is a good way to get him injured. But do you think Senga is legit for the rest of the season? Do you think he's somebody that needs to be rostered everywhere?
Depends on, I mean, the word from Devin Williams, I mean, it sounds like he's not going to be out too long. So I wouldn't say you need to roster Senga, but I mean, it's pretty fun right now, the way he's pitching and the way the Mets are playing. They're giving Senga save chances. So, again, you know, like, you know, if you're rostering, there's 30 relievers rostered in your league, he needs to be rostered. But if you're dropping, you know, some of these higher upside names, I don't think you need to do that for Senga for the next week or two. But I'd imagine Williams is going to come back. I know the Mets aren't going to make the postseason, but they're still, I mean, Williams still wants to get back and pitch and probably finish September strong, go into the offseason with that at least.
Okay. Well, with Williams potentially returning and Senga as the closer, I think we're also looking at maybe who are some of the options for 2027, given the Mets being out of the playoff race at this point. I think they acquired some interesting names. If Senga sticks in the bullpen as well, he's pretty interesting. On top of that, I think they'll probably test him back in the rotation in the spring. But Daniel Duarte has emerged as a pretty decent option. Nate Lavender has been somebody that has a lot of upside from the left side. Jonathan Pintaro maybe, but Jeffrey Yan's a lot of fun. We got Daniel Nunez back. There's a lot of guys that are very interesting for 2027. And who do you think emerges as those guys that could be key members of that setup crew?
I mean, Lavender should, he should stick around. Duarte probably has done enough to as well. It's the Mets. They're going to go out and add relievers again. They're going to restock. I mean, I know I want Jeffrey Yan to be a thing. I mean, the stuff is really good. It's just their command is like horrible. Just really good, like A plus stuff, F command, like almost every day from him. You know, it's, I think someone you maybe that's like a last roster spot you can believe in. I mean, Nunez has looked, he has not, the results have not looked good. The stuff hasn't been terrible though. I'm kind of optimistic, you know, with a full off season in front of him, he can get back to where he was before the injury. Then you get like Austin Warren too, who's kind of interesting. So there's enough there. You know, the Mets do a pretty good job for all things considered, that they've done a good job with finding relievers and finding bullpen help there. So, I think they'll be okay. And they'll spend at least on one reliever, if not two, this offseason, I'd imagine.
All right. In the Phillies bullpen, we sort of know who's good there. We know who the closer is, Yoan Duran. But I think the question revolves around how this bullpen holds up in the playoffs. Duran's the closer. Jonathan Bolin is their best setup option, but can we trust the guys behind them? Orion Kerkring, Brooks Raley, Jose Alvarado, maybe Alex McFarland, or the return of Caleb Killian from the IL. Do you think this is a bullpen that holds up in the postseason?
Ben Joyce just looks so disgusting in this game. Got the save again. So I think Ben Joyce is the closer. Natera didn't pitch in this game, whatever that means. He has not pitched in a week. Anyway, the Philly, really concerned behind Duran and Bolin. Raley looks good. Raley's going to be fine. So you have those three. Kerkering and, I mean, Alvarado just have, you can't, they have not been able, you haven't been able to trust them. One of those guys at least needs to show up for the postseason. And then, you know, maybe you hope that, I don't know if Killian's even going to be back. McFarland's the wild card, and we talked about him a little bit last week. I mean, like, unbelievable stuff from McFarland. Is the command going to be good enough to get him, you know, a postseason roster spot? We'll see. But yeah, I mean, I just wanted one of those guys between Kerkering and Alvarado. I think you need to get something from there and hope that Bolin and Raley can continue to pitch well. At least gives you four solid options, which I think is like the minimum in the postseason for, you know, what you want. So, but yeah, it's definitely been disappointing years for a lot of the guys in that bullpen that started the year. I mean, their initial is in front of Duran was supposed to be Kerkering, Keller, and Alvarado, and not worked out very well for them.
Not really, but it has been working out in the other part of Pennsylvania. And we already talked about the emergence of Mason Montgomery. And before he got the save today, I think there was more question about it. But my question was about whether or not Montgomery was the closer or if Weaver's the closer or if Soto's even really still in the running. So maybe we pivot from that and we ask, you know, what's the pecking order behind Montgomery? Is Weaver the top guy? And outside of that, who is trusted in this bullpen? It's a lot of guys that don't really have traditional roles because Soto was the closer. I don't really know what his situation is now. Johan Ramirez has been used as an opener, as a long reliever. Camilo Duvall is a home run machine. Kirby Yates is a guy who doesn't throw a lot of strikes. And Lake Backer has also been used in multi-inning role as well.
I think the Pirates do like Camilo Duvall. I feel like the way things are now, if like, you know, a starter goes five innings and they have a two run lead, whatever. I think that the way Soto's been pitching the sixth inning a lot. So I think there's Soto, Duvall, Weaver, Montgomery is the kind of the pecking order right now. I think Weaver's locked into the eighth inning. It's just like what happens, you know, between Soto and Duvall. And I guess Kirby Yates might be in the mix too. He has been fine, but I mean, I don't know how much I trust between Duvall and Yates. I don't know if I try. I don't really trust either one of them. And Johan Ramirez has excellent stuff, but the command is so hit or miss. It's hard to trust him. So Soto has been pitching fairly well. I mean, as the sixth, seventh inning guy for them. So I don't see any reason for him to completely just not have a role for holds leagues. I think that would be dumb, but yeah, who's that fourth guy between Duvall and Yates probably at this point?
In San Diego, they have one of the best bullpens in baseball. They also have maybe the best closer in baseball. Mason Miller has had an incredible year. How many Cy Young votes do you think Mason Miller gets? He's got a 0.88 ERA, a 47% strikeout rate. He's got 30 saves. And I think the Cy Young altogether is out of the question with Jacob Mizorowski sort of running away with that. Yeah, but he should get some top three votes, I think.
Yeah, I mean, he started off strong and kind of hit a little bit of a lull, but now he's finishing strong. I mean, what do we have? I mean, I think I was looking at him the other day. He basically allows one run a month. This is his quota. So I think he's already allowed his run in August. So he should be good for the rest of the month here. But yeah, I mean, he'll get some votes and deservedly so. I mean, even with the way Mizorowski's been pitching and whatnot, like we haven't really seen a reliever like Mason Miller. If he gets the 40 saves, which might be tough at this point, but there's a chance. I think he does. I think he's at like 30-ish, 30-something. Then, like, yeah, I mean, that with the potentially sub-1 ERA and whip with that strikeout rate, I mean, that's kind of unheard of. So, yeah,
he deserves pitched again votes. Today, too. Yeah. So he's at 31 saves, 0.86 ERA, 0.82 whip. And, yeah, pretty incredible. 95 strikeouts thus far.
Yeah, I mean, just it's going to be a shame that he doesn't, like, I know he's going to win the reliever of the year award, which is cool and all, but it's like this is a special season, you know. So yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. You know, we've started our mock draft or way too early mock draft the pitcher list, but like, where is Mason Miller get drafted in those competitive roto leagues? I mean, is he a first or second round pick? I mean, second round, probably first. Is that potential late first? Like if you're at 15 and a 15 teamer, is Miller one of your first two picks? I don't know. I think there's an argument for it.
For sure. Yeah. And I'm sure there will be some leagues where that does happen. Yeah. I don't think it's going to be one of us who ends up doing that, but yeah, I could definitely see him going in the late first round. Let's go over to the Giants, and they are in a pretty bad way, especially with the bullpen. And I think they're just looking to identify some trustworthy arms for 2027. And I think right now it may seem that Dylan Smith is sort of auditioning for next year's closer role. And do you think that's sort of the case with Dylan Smith right now? And who do you think might emerge alongside him as one of the trustworthy options for 2027?
In that bullpen? I mean, I guess we're waiting to see. I mean, Paguero had always interested me, but I don't know. Mm-hmm. I mean, his hamstrings are just like made of Triscuits or something at this point. I don't know why he's missed so much time with this hamstring injury all year. Mm-hmm. I mean, no one else there is very interesting. Trent Harris has a decent sweeper, but nothing really else. You know, maybe we're thinking a starter turn reliever. Maybe Hayden Birdsong comes back as a reliever next year.
Yeah,
that could be interesting.
What you're saying is it's not looking too good.
I mean, I don't know what Rowan Wick was apparently an intriguing signing by them.
Yeah,
I hear. We'll see what he looks like in the winter. And obviously, I mean, if Randy Rodriguez is healthy, mm-hmm. that's like, it's not even close. He's far and away the best reliever here.
Okay.
Dylan Smith's really good. He should probably be a setup guy for a little bit. But the facts right now are that he is the closer because there's no one else here that's interesting or can close out games. So yeah, I mean Ryan Walker's still in Triple. It's weird that Ryan Walker's still in Triple A with the bullpen the way it looks right now.
No, it's not that weird. He's been terrible.
He's been terrible, but like, man, it's really taking a turn.
Yeah. So it sounds like the options maybe for 2027, Dylan Smith, and then a host of injured guys like Rowan Wick, Randy Rodriguez, Joel Paguero. Yeah. And that's not that bad
They're
of a group.
They're going to sign somebody. Sure, it's not. Yeah. But
it's not a terrible group. I could definitely see that working. Maybe Reggie Crawford finally starts working out. That guy was a two-way player coming out of college, but now he's sort of a reliever only, and I still see potential in him. Will Bednar is sort of a failed starter. He was a first round pick a few years back. Maybe he figures things out of the bullpen. They did get Eric Sarantola as well, Wilkin Ramos. There's some options there, but it sounds like if you're looking for high upside options, they are all currently injured, so maybe they can return to health next year and figure things out. Let's go to the Cardinals, and I think I have no clue what's going on behind Riley O'Brien. He's been the closer all year, and I am curious to hear whether or not you think he can finish the season as the National League leader in saves. He's currently tied with Mason Miller at 31. Yeah, he's been great this year, very solid, but behind him, it's questionable. I mean, we're talking a very unknown, under-the-radar names, George Soriano, Ryan Stanek, Justin Brule, Gordon Graceffo, Caleb Ferguson, Luis Gastelum, you know, the classic Luis Gastelum, and Peter Strzelecki. So
Gastelum's
really
pretty
know.
Interesting. Don't knock is Gastelum. He? Okay. Yeah.
And he's a cool name.
Yeah, he is. Does have a cool name. But he's not going to be the closer this year. I mean, yeah, O'Brien seems to – the last couple of outings for O'Brien has looked a lot better. So I'm starting to – I mean, at this point, we're this late in the year, just like, let's ride it out and hope that the season ends and he can continue to stay healthy and throw strikes and get saves because, yeah, I mean, he's easily the best option there right now. I can tell you right now, he's going to be the guy that is way overdrafted next year.
Of course. Yeah. Just based on all the saves. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll tell you right now, we're going to be fading him or I'm going to be fading him. Yeah.
And, this was Ryan Helsley a couple of years back.
Yeah. He's the Ryan Helsley of 2 years ago, the Carlos Estevez of this year.
Yeah. Yes.
So, I mean, he's better than Carlos Estevez, but he's been getting lucky recently. The command is very sketchy. Yeah. He's a really good reliever. I doesn't make sense to me as a closer. So, he probably will end up leading the NL in saves. He got another one tonight, right? I mean, it's between him and Mason Miller, I think. But yeah. he's got a pretty. I don't know who's leading in saves. Should I know who's leading in saves?
Yeah, it's Brian Baker. Baker's got 35. Cade Smith's got 31. O'Brien's got 32, and Mason.
Okay,
Miller's
so he's
got
one up on Mason Miller. Yeah, that's going to be tight, but I do think, I mean, the Cardinals are, they made some trades, but they're still playing well. They still have, like, that lineup still, especially if Baez can, I don't know what we're going to get from Baez. That's another,
He might, he might not get as many hits as he had home runs in that first game the rest of the way.
He's going to strike out, like, 18 times a week with, like, three home runs, or, you know, it's going to be something like that. But, I mean, it still gives them some power, some thump there.
Yeah.
And the pitching staff continue to surprise. So, I mean, maybe the Cardinals will give O'Brien enough save chances. So, yeah, I mean, as long as he's healthy, he's going to be closing out games. There's no threat there.
All right. Last team, the Washington Nationals, and it's audition time in our nation's capital. Who in this bullpen emerges as an intriguing option for 2027?
I think it's surprising that Orlando Ribalta, I feel, keeps getting underappreciated here because he's been pitching better than anyone else in this bullpen. But they keep they go to everyone else for, they went to Yovani Cruz for a save the other night or the other day. And they just had Ribalta pitch against the bottom of the order in the seventh. And it's like, I mean, can we give Ribalta a chance before Cruz? I like Cruz. I get it. He throws 100, but like, I don't know. I think, you know, Ribalta and Beeter are definitely safe. They're going to be on this bullpen next year. I mean, outside of that, like we talked about, you and I have talked about Will Dion. I don't know if he's a reliever, if he's a bulk guy, if he's a starter, what he is, but he should have a spot in the roster doing something. And I mean, Cruz has his issues, but he's still better than a lot of the other options they have right now. So I think you're also looking at some starters turn reliever at some point. They have to make decisions on, like, you know, Cornelio, you know, Carson Palmquist in AAA, Luis Perales, who's should be a starter at some point, but I don't know, you know, he hasn't been called up yet. But he's out of options after this year. So yeah, I mean, it's, you know, they have some interesting AAA guys, kind of. Eddie Yean has been good in AAA, but not so much at the MLB level. So again, just they have some interesting guys here with Beeter, Ribalta, maybe Cruz, but like, go add, you know, like, can we just sign like a veteran to a 1 year? Again, there's going to be a lot of free agent relievers with closer experience this year. Just bring in somebody, please. This year, just bring in anyone but Jordan Romano, someone who's like still got something left in the tank, with closer experience, just some veteran presence, you know? And I think, you know, Beeter is what he is. He's just, it's hard to trust him in the closer role with the way he walks people.
Yeah. Yeah, they got some options there, but none of them seem like the guy who should be closing out games, at least not for 2027. I think you're right. They should go out on the free agent market and grab somebody. They've definitely set themselves up financially to be able to do that. And don't count out Justin Lawrence returning. He's still in AAA right now. Yeah, he's off the 40-man roster, though, so that's more of a joke at this point. But he's walking just every single guy he faces, so hopefully he can figure it out. I still got a little bit of faith left. But they made a point to get some guys at the trade deadline that could be potentials. I mean, you forgot about, like, Ben Grable they acquired from the Yankees. Yeah, they still got Jake Bird, too. I think there's some other guys in the minor leagues that could become potential starters. I think you mentioned Josh Hartle too as maybe a potential guy who could fail as a starter and get there. Jack Siebert. So we'll see what the Nationals do, but they've got more young upside guys than most of these bullpens that we've talked about that are sort of in this audition phase of the season. Like, I feel more confident about them than the Giants or the Reds, just in terms of the talent that they have for 2027. So that's going to do it for our nationally closing storylines, one of our longest episodes of the year, but we survived. So Rick, why don't you go ahead and plug your socials and let everybody know what you're working on?
Yeah. You can find me at I Am Rick Graham on socials. You know, for the rest of the year, still working on RP Roundup and RP Streamers every day, every morning, hopefully. And then each Tuesday from here on out, we'll have the reliever ranks, closer ranks, save ranks, holds ranks, and save plus hold ranks.
All right. A lot going on there in the Graham household. You can follow the pod at In the Pen Pod. You can follow me at Jake Crumpler, where I do daily SP streamers and I break down every single start via the pitcher list, stats, player cards. You can catch me on the First Pitch podcast 4 days a week. You can catch me on the Plus Pitch podcast on the weekends when I do the SP roundup as well. And you can find more of my work over at Baseball HQ, where I do playing time analysis for the Giants, A's, Diamondbacks, and Angels. But if you want links to all of my work, that's over at crumplerbaseball.com. That'll do it for this episode 172 of the In the Pen podcast. We'll talk to you all next week.